From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Dr. Martin Grubala from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling about a new approach to studying protein folding and dynamics in living cells.
Dr. Martin Grubala is the James R. Eisner Professor of Chemistry at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He's also a faculty member of the Beckman Institute. His group is engaged in experiments and computational modeling designed to study a broad range of fundamental issues in chemical and biological physics. Dr. Grubala, you and your colleagues recently published a paper in Nature Methods about a new technique for studying protein dynamics in living cells. Would you describe this method, which you've called fast relaxation imaging, in more detail for our listeners?
Basically, what we can do is we can look at fast chemical reactions inside living cells using this method. And what we do is we put a single cell under a microscope, and we give it a little fever by using a laser to gently but very quickly, and that's important, quickly heat the cell. And, you know, any of the chemical processes occur in a cell, like protein folding, but many other different ones also, they all depend sensitively on temperature. And so basically, immediately right after we give the cell that quick fever, you know, after we jump the temperature up, and we can also jump the temperature down, these chemical reactions get going inside the cell. And then we can monitor these reactions as they happen and as they change in time by looking at changes in the fluorescence from the cell. And so what we do is we take a reaction of interest to us, we label it so the fluorescence emitted changes in color between the product and the reactant, and then literally under the microscope, the cell changes color as a function of time, and we use a fast sensitive camera to record that. So that's what this technique does.
What specifically does this technique allow you to do?
So in order to stay alive, cells constantly have to metabolize, they have to sense their environment, they have to make new proteins, you know, move around, all the things that, you know, are associated with a living cell. Now, all of these processes are driven by chemical reactions. And what the technique, you know, Frey or fast relaxation imaging allows us to do is to resolve in time directly any of these chemical processes, as long as they can be labeled by fluorescence. And in fact, actually, that's nowadays possible with almost anything. And, you know, last year's Nobel Prize in chemistry, among other things, the year before, focused on having these fluorescent labeling proteins that you can use to label processes inside cells. So that's what we do. And we can look at protein folding into their functional state. We can look at protein misfolding and aggregation, which is actually related to diseases. We can look at proteins binding to DNA, RNA, and doing signaling that allows the cell to sense things or make, you know, new things. And all of these reactions occur at different speeds. And they form sort of a very complex network of a huge number of reactions where the next reaction depends on what happened in the previous one. And so by time resolving all of these steps, we can sort of really begin to build a picture of what's going on dynamically inside a cell.
In your experiment published in Nature Methods, would you tell our audience exactly what experiment you carried out to show the functionality of this fast relaxation imaging method?
Right, and that's a fair question because, in fact, you know, Nature Methods is a methods journal, so you describe in there, you know, methods that you hope others will be able to apply. So there are two ingredients to this method. You know, as I said, you need to get a reaction going, like protein folding, and that's specifically what we looked at in this case. And then you need to be able to monitor this reaction to see how it occurs in the cell. So what we did is we put a protein that was labeled fluorescently inside a cell, such that when the protein folds and when the protein unfolds, it fluoresces in a different color. And then to get the reaction started, we used a programmable infrared laser pulse to gently heat the cell. So we don't want to heat it too much because otherwise you'll kill it, but we do want to heat it very quickly so that we can time resolve the subsequent, you know, folding kinetics in this case. So now we have this protein inside the cell. Let's say the protein is folded. We jump the temperature up a little bit. The protein that we looked at is called phosphoglycerate kinase. It's a very basic metabolic enzyme that occurs in all mammalian eukaryotic cells that basically produces our energy source, ATP, produces a molecule that you need, you know, to live to provide energy to other processes. So, and so what happened is we basically put in the heating laser pulse, the protein unfolds, unfolded, and we were actually able to resolve in time how it unfolded. And most interestingly, what we were able to see is that in different parts of the cell, you get very different reaction speeds. So in some places it'll be slow, in other places it'll be fast, because the cell actually modulates how the folding process occurs.
How does this approach differ from other methods that are currently used to study protein dynamics?
Yeah, so people, of course, really would like to be able to study protein dynamics in living systems, because that's where it really occurs. But it's been pretty hard to do, and so mostly, actually, people have done experiments in vitro in the test tube. And so there you have a homogeneous environment. Every time you do the experiment, you get the same answer. In every place in the test tube, you know, you get the same answer. Whereas in a cell, you have a very complex environment, and different parts of the cell can actually tune the chemical reactions differently, like protein folding. And maybe the cell actually uses that to control protein folding in order to exert control of how the protein operates or does its function in different parts of the cell. Now, people have done some live cell experiments, so we're not the first people to ever look inside a live cell, of course. They just haven't been able to do it with the time resolution that we get. We can basically get down to millisecond and even microsecond time resolution, and so we can look at fairly fast reactions. In the past, people have basically looked at much slower things where it might take you, seconds, many seconds or minutes or even, half an hour or so to, see a difference in the reaction. So what we can get at is basically reactions that are much faster than people have been able to do in live cells. But we don't need to do them in vitro anymore. We can actually do them in live cells. So it's sort of combining the best of sort of being able to do fast reactions and being able to do them in live cells at the same time.
What are the practical human-scale applications of this new technique?
Well, let me give you two examples. One is that it's become clear that a lot of diseases occur because of protein aggregation. So a protein that normally would just stay more or less by itself and do its job basically just globs together with other proteins and forms aggregates. And these aggregates can be poisonous to cells. And a lot of diseases, Alzheimer's disease, Huntington's disease, mad cow disease, a lot of these kinds of diseases are actually driven by these protein aggregation processes. And it turns out that's something we can also look at. We can look at protein folding, as we did in this paper as an example, but you could actually use the same technique to also look at how these aggregation processes occur as a function of time and try to understand the basic mechanism. And there are a lot of unanswered questions right now about the basic mechanism, such as, do these aggregates form inside the bulk of the cell in the cytoplasm, or do these aggregates actually form by binding to the membrane, maybe puncturing the membrane of the cell, killing it? And of course, if you're trying to develop drugs, you need to at least have some basic idea of what the actual toxicity is that's going on in order to be able to design something against it. Another example would be, maybe sort of more on the scientific development side, is that we are tool developers, and that's why we published this in Nature Methods, and I think this is really going to be an enabling tool for cell biologists. Instead of just looking at cells more or less in the state that they are in, actually being able to follow the dynamics of cells on the kinds of chemical timescales where interesting chemical processes happen, I think it's going to be really useful, not just for sort of instrument developers like my group, but actually cell biologists who are hopefully going to adopt this technique and really use it to look at fast dynamics in cells.
Can you talk about the next research steps you have in mind to take this technology further and further refine it?
Yeah, so basically the kinds of systems, we've demonstrated basically that the method works, and we used a very simple kind of reaction, just folding of a single protein, in order to demonstrate that it works. It's always good, the first time around to pick something where it's very clear what the results look like. Now, we actually do want to study some of these aggregation reactions that I mentioned, so we're currently working on a protein called alpha-synuclein, which is implicated in Huntington's disease, and we're also working on prions. Those are basically those proteins that can go from a good shape into a bad shape and catalyze any other of the same protein to make that bad shape and basically make fibrils that eventually destroy cells and can lead to diseases like mad cow disease or Jakob-Creutzfeldt disease. So, and the way we're doing the experiments is we're putting this interesting question like, is the protein perhaps relatively harmless and doesn't aggregate when it's in the cytoplasm, but it's when it binds to the membrane that it forms aggregates and then eventually punctures through the membrane. And of course, because we have a technique that can look at both the kinetics, the timing of how quickly do the concentrations of aggregates and of non-aggregated proteins change in the cytoplasm, how quickly do these concentrations change in the membrane, we can actually correlate which of these processes are more important? Is it occurring mostly in the cytoplasm, thus binding to the membrane play a role? Is eventually when a certain critical time span is reached, that will the membrane rupture? And so basically alpha-synuclein Huntington's disease and these prion proteins are the two next things that we're going to be looking at with this technique.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghouse saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.